Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or simply hoping to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and PsychReg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall.
Welcome back. This week, we're going to continue some of our conversations about the relationship between mental illness, mental health issues,
right,
and violence.
Right.
Because there's been the ongoing conversations, mm-hmm. We'll call them conversations, as it relates to gun violence and mass shootings and things like that, continues. And you know, Richard, I've watched, or I've not watched, I haven't watched any news, but I've listened to a lot of podcasts and things. And exactly what we were saying, the first time we recorded after the shooting on the 14th was that Friday. We recorded that Friday, February 16th, for our Saturday podcast. And it was in that podcast, I think, was when we said, something feels different about this,
right,
this
mm-hmm.
one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what everybody keeps saying.
Right.
Everybody keeps saying there's something different about this one. And I read this morning that a lot of governors are coming out and saying that they are interested in talking about, different gun laws and gun control and things. So maybe something is different.
Right. There was something different from the beginning. And then when the students started speaking out mm-hmm. and on the news when they would be interviewed, some of them were quite eloquent, mm-hmm. Articulate about their fears, their legitimate fears about, we have to stop. Somebody has to stop this.
Mm-hmm.
And they're pleading with adults to stop it. The other thing we said was that we don't want to rush to interventions.
Right.
And that was the second point that we made, that immediately we had people calling for the resignation of the FBI director.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and now we have Governor Scott has come out with a list of recommendations mm-hmm. of things they're going to do. And he reported that this is a committee of stakeholders, mm-hmm. educators, police mm-hmm. officers, etc. Well, it's only been a couple of days, and you can't do that kind of thorough
right.
Problem solving
right.
in just a couple of days. And then today I looked at the news, and now they're calling for the Broward County Sheriff to resign. You know, the
mm-hmm.
politicians in
mm-hmm.
Florida and Tallahassee are calling for the resignation of the Broward County Sheriff. And I mean, it just goes on and on and on. And these are political decisions. They're not safety decisions.
Right.
They're not gun issues. They're not mental health issues. These are politically driven issues. It makes it look like we're doing something.
And I think that that's the point. The point is that we feel as though we have to do something. And it's almost as though we know that if something's not done within the first week or 2 weeks,
right.
everybody's going, all of our attention is going to shift, and then nothing's going to be done.
Right. Right.
Because we know that after about a couple of weeks, our conversations, the news
mm-hmm.
and shifts to something different,
right.
and we're no longer thinking about
that's right.
that. So
no, I think that the two things that I think we need to be careful of is, one is these should never be political decisions.
Mm-hmm.
No matter who whether it's a governor or legislature,
mm-hmm.
and doesn't matter whether it's state or federal, stop calling for the resignation of people. It may be that in the end, a person is deemed to be inadequate
right.
or incompetent or something. But let's not start with the assumption that somebody did something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
There's plenty of blame to go around, okay? And the second thing is, we don't want to just come up with what you referred to as a knee-jerk response.
Right, right.
You know, we did that with Columbine when we did zero tolerance,
mm-hmm.
and it was a monumental failure.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows that now. So the other thing is, let's not come up with a knee-jerk response.
Mm-hmm.
And the third thing is, everything has to be on the table.
Mm-hmm.
So when people say, well, gun control isn't going to be on the table,
right.
why not?
Right.
Okay. Why should mental health and not gun? All these issues are complex. So everything has to be on the table. Everything has to be up for discussion if we're going to come up with effective interventions.
Right.
If you just want to do something to make it look like you're doing something, that's one thing. But if you really mm-hmm. want to solve this complex problem, you have to put everything on the table.
Right. Mm-hmm. So we talked about a lot of that last week.
Right.
And so mm-hmm. this week we're going to sort of spend a little bit more time focusing sort of specifically on some mental right. health concerns right. mm-hmm. because of all of the things, all of the issues that we reviewed last week, I think that the issue of mental illness and mental health is getting the most focus.
It keeps recurring, you know, right. and I think the phrase that you most often hear is, how do we keep guns out of the hands of people with mental illness?
Right.
I think that's right. what everybody's talking about.
And so that's what we're gonna right. focus on that one today. And over the course of the week, we're going to talk about, again, just some nuances that I think mm-hmm. that we think are really important for people right. to consider and to think about before just saying we should restrict people with mental illness from having a gun. I think that there's some nuances that we really have to consider mm-hmm. because, you know, I don't know that everybody that says that knows what mental illness is.
That's right.
And the
right.
difference between mental illness and symptoms and environmental things. And so I think
environmental stressors. You know, right. we talk about the stress diathesis model in right. psychology. Well, you can have environmental stressors that lead you to make bad decisions mm-hmm. that have nothing to do with mental
right.
illness.
Right.
Okay. So we do know about much that I don't know about gun control. I'm not mm-hmm. a Second Amendment constitutional scholar, so right. there's a lot that I don't know about that. But we do know about this mental health issue.
Right.
So what we want to do is let's investigate, let's take apart this issue of keeping guns out of the hands of right. people with mental illness.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So let's talk then very quickly about what it means, what mm-hmm. it would mean to, if we kept the hands out of anyone with a mental illness.
Kept guns
out of the hands of anyone with a mental illness.
That's right. Let's start with that. That's the sort of the broad topic. That's what everybody's asking for. Let's see what that means.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So we know that, and we've talked about this in previous podcasts, right. The DSM has the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, what the American Psychiatric Association has published as sort of the diagnostic reference tool mm-hmm. That most mental health professionals and insurance companies and everything else uses to make diagnoses of various mental health conditions. And so that book contains what we refer to as mental illnesses right. and the diagnostic criteria for those. The first edition of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual came out in 1952. Okay. Over the course of the last 65 years or so, mm-hmm. Well, we'll just say 60 years because the most recent edition came out in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
We have gone from 106 diagnoses
right.
in the DSM mm-hmm. to well over 300 diagnoses in the DSM-5.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
So over the course of 60 years, mm-hmm. let's say 50 before, I meant 60 years. Over mm-hmm. the course of 60 years, our the number of diagnoses that we're making has more than doubled.
More than doubled, right.
Okay. well, it's actually more than, it's about tripled.
Tripled, right.
Right.
And in the last edition, they tried to keep the number of unique diagnoses down.
Right.
They collapsed, for example, they right. collapsed mm-hmm. autism. From 5 to 1, mm-hmm. It could be much larger than right. than 300. But they made an effort to limit the mm-hmm. number of new diagnoses.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we have many more diagnoses than mm-hmm. we had just 50 or 60 years ago, and we have many more people who are meeting diagnostic criteria for them
right.
now. Whether that's because of simply because of population growth,
right.
or whether that's because we are getting better at identifying right. more people are seeing physicians than they did in the 1950s. Mm-hmm. Not sure why, but we are seeing a significant increase in the prevalence of most mental health conditions.
That's right. And it may just be that people are going to mental health professionals mm-hmm. now, and they didn't 50
right.
years ago.
Right.
My parents didn't go to professionals.
Right.
We do. My generation right. does.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so.
And if we use autism that you just right. mentioned a moment ago, you know, in the 1950s, mm-hmm. it was a relatively rare
right.
diagnosis.
Rare. Mm-hmm.
Few people met criteria, which is why, you know, in the 80s, when Rain Man, the movie
right.
Rain Man came out, it was so profound because relatively few people had heard about autism.
And in the 1950s and 60s, kids didn't go to school.
Right.
I mean, if you had a handicapping condition, if you couldn't get into the building, if you couldn't do the regular curriculum, you just didn't go to school. You either stayed at home or you went to a center. So you weren't counted.
Right, because remember, special education stuff didn't really come about until the 1960s
mid-70s.
And 70s.
Yeah, it came out in the mid-70s. And so there was no way to count these kids because you didn't know that they existed because they weren't in public schools.
Right.
Now they are in public schools, so they're easier to count. Okay.
Right.
It could also be that neonatology, you know, 60, in the 1950s and 60s, if you weighed less than 3 pounds, your chances of survival were pretty small.
Right.
Now, you can be a pound, and we can keep you alive and vibrant and health. You know, you can live a long life.
Right.
And so there are many contributing factors, but yes, there's more mental illness, and in many cases the symptoms are more severe.
Right. Okay. So whereas autism was a relatively rare condition, you know, 50 or 60 years ago, you know, the most recent update that we saw was what, 1 in 66?
That's still an alarming number.
So more than 1% of the population would meet criteria for autism.
And same thing with ADHD.
ADHD in some areas is up to 11%.
Right. If you look at the Southeast, much higher rate, very high rates of ADHD.
Right. But the example that I think is important for us to use when it comes to this is because we've talked before about 20% of the population would meet criteria for something. Okay,
right.
So that number, okay. So, but I'm sure that people who hear 20% of the population, yeah, but some of those people, you know, it's just mild depression, it's just this, it's just that. Granted, all right, so let's take a condition that's pretty significant that I think that most people, if they just heard the word, would say that a person with that condition should not own a gun.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Of all these mental illnesses, which one would you say this is the one that nobody with this condition should have a gun because it's so serious?
Right.
These people are so impaired and they're so potentially dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They should never get a gun.
Right.
Right.
Right. And the example, the diagnosis that most often comes up is schizophrenia.
Right.
Because schizophrenia is a thought disorder. Now, we're generalizing here. There are a lot of people who have schizophrenia who are not significantly impaired.
Yeah.
You know, they're able to work and function, and with medication they do just fine to manage their symptoms. However, when you think about schizophrenia and schizophrenia spectrum disorder, so there's a number of disorders that fall within that broad category. We're talking about estimated to be about 1% of the population.
Right.
All right, so about 1% of the population meets criteria for one of the schizophrenia spectrum disorders.
Right.
So it could be schizophrenia or schizoaffective disorder. Even some of the delusional disorders and some of those other things would fall within that broad spectrum. Okay, so 1% of the population. How many people are in the United States?
300 million.
Okay. About. 1% of 300 million is 3 million.
3 million.
Okay. Can we imagine... Could you imagine a ruling, and now that's 300 million people. Schizophrenia is a disorder that primarily affects adults.
Right.
So if we took out children,
50 million. We're still talking about 250 million people.
250 million. So we're talking about 2.5 million to 3 million people with schizophrenia.
Mm-hmm.
Could you imagine a rule of some sort that would say that 3 million people would be the right to the Second Amendment, as people would say, that the right to the Second Amendment opinion would be removed from 3 million people?
Yeah, imagine the United States Congress, Paul Ryan gets up and says, okay, beginning tomorrow, beginning March 1st, 2.5 million people have just lost their Second Amendment right.
Right.
Okay. I don't care what you think about the Second Amendment, but that's not the issue. The issue is that we come up with a ruling that says this is the most severe mental illness. 2.5 million people have it, and we're going to exclude them. We're going to deny them.
Right.
What would be the response?
Right. It would be pretty significant, and rightfully so.
And rightfully so.
Because, again, if we're just looking at the numbers, how many mass shootings were there in 2017?
300
340?
Around 350.
Okay. 350 mass shootings, mm-hmm. 3 million people with schizophrenia.
Right.
How many people who did a mass shooting suffered from schizophrenia? The proportion is extremely small.
I don't know that any did. Only 7.5% of these shootings are attached to people with mental illness.
That were identified as mentally ill before.
Any mental illness.
Right. Right. So the point is that if the worst mental illness, that the most impairing mm-hmm. mental illness that we can think of is schizophrenia, and that affects 3 million people in the United States, and there were 350 mass shootings in 2017, right. and none of them that I remember hearing about.
I don't think any of them were.
None of them were diagnosed with schizophrenia. Why would we blame schizophrenia?
Right. And
why would we focus on saying, you know, these people, because they have a really serious, severe mental illness, mm-hmm. those people should have their rights taken away.
That's right. And, you know, I said earlier, I'm not a constitutional scholar, right. but I love the Constitution. Mm-hmm. I love the amendments. I like the first 10. Nobody disagrees with that. We should have these guarantees. When you step on to... You know, we just had the Olympics, mm-hmm. and I look at those skateboarders. What are they called?
Bobsleds?
No, the single board.
Snowboards.
Okay, they stand at the top of that mm-hmm. enormous mountain. Mm-hmm. That's a slippery slope.
Yeah.
And I think of, if you deny a group one of these first 10 amendments, mm-hmm. one of these of the Bill right. of Rights, okay. If you deny a group, for whatever reason, mm-hmm. you're entering that slippery slope.
Yeah.
Because what if next year we decide to, well, I think we should bar this group,
right.
or this group, or you can't start, I mean, we've seen this at work in other countries. Mm-hmm. We saw it in Nazi Germany. Mm-hmm. You were Jewish, so you were denied certain right. rights because the leaders of Germany at the time said, well, Jews are the enemy, they're the problem, so we're going to deny them their rights to
right.
private property and ownership and eventually their lives. Okay,
right.
So they were denied those basic rights. To be exceedingly careful mm-hmm. about denying any group one of these basic rights, whether it's freedom of speech or freedom to own a gun. That's not right. the issue. But you're right. The second issue is, this is the most severe of all the mental illnesses. But clearly, it's not the reason. Mm-hmm. It's not the explanation for school shootings.
Right.
Okay. So that's issue number one when it comes to mental illness.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we have to be cautious. We have to be, you know, when we're talking about mental illness mm-hmm. and we're talking about the relationship between mental illness and violence, I think that we can say that there are some with mental illness that have a propensity to become violent. Certainly, that is a minority
right.
of those with a mental illness. And,
right.
and I think that next piece is the piece that we forget to mention.
Yeah.
Because just because a person has a mental illness doesn't mean that they become violent.
Right.
And just because a person is violent doesn't mean that they have a mental illness.
That's right.
And so we're using faulty logic
right.
to try to explain this. And again, I'm going to go back to the knee-jerk mm-hmm. thing,
right.
that it's an easy thing to look at, because mm-hmm. when a person looks at some of these horrific scenes
sure.
and say, how could somebody do that?
Well, they have to be mentally
ill. They have to have a mental illness.
That's right. After the Las Vegas shooter, mm-hmm. you know, you say, he had to be mentally ill.
Right.
No person in his right mind, mm-hmm. and this is what you hear people say, would do that. So we target mental illness mm-hmm. when mental illness, in fact, isn't the problem. So when you're
right.
when you're asking, when you ask, when anybody asks to keep the guns out of the hands of the mentally ill, let's make sure that you understand exactly what you're talking about
right.
when we talk about mental illness. I understand the question,
mm-hmm.
okay, but it's being phrased incorrectly.
Right.
And if you chase mental illness, if you target mental illness, you're going to be solving the wrong problem.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
You're just chasing the wrong thing.
Right.
Okay. So that's issue number one.
Right.
You're really not asking about mental illness. You're asking another question.
Right.
And we want to talk about what those other questions are.
Right. Mm-hmm. Another major issue, is that there are no absolute ways to make mental illness, mental health diagnoses.
That's right.
There are no lab tests.
That's right. The first issue is diagnosis. Mm-hmm. You know, how do you make a mental illness diagnosis?
Right.
Right.
Right. And it's clinical. It's, you know, you can't, we can't see how someone thinks. So all we can do is look at behaviors and look at trends and patterns of behavior and then make a clinical judgment based upon experience and understanding of human behavior. That's the best that we have.
Right. And when we use the term clinical diagnosis, it's a diagnosis based on observation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There is no lab test. There is no x-ray. There is no blood test. It's a diagnosis made by observation. You observe the symptoms, and if there's a sufficient number of them, then you make the diagnosis.
Right.
Now, I may not observe them directly. It may be somebody's family member or teacher or somebody else who knows the person, but somebody observes the symptom,
right,
and then you make the diagnosis.
Right.
So when we say clinical diagnosis, it's a diagnosis made through observation.
Right. So that introduces a great deal of subjectivity.
That's right.
to it, and I hate to say that as a clinician, but it's true, and so we have to rely, and that this is why it's so important that if you seek mental health treatment, that you seek treatment from someone who's knowledgeable and well-read and understands some of these mental health issues, because, you know, I mean, good grief, you know, somebody walks into one office and says, you know, yeah, I'm struggling, I have mood swings, they're going to walk out with a diagnosis of bipolar disorder.
Right.
That may or probably isn't bipolar disorder.
Right.
There are so many other facets associated with mood swings, and so it could be all kinds of other things.
Right.
But if you don't have that experience and that understanding of what these conditions are, then you're going to misdiagnose and you're going to misidentify.
I think, again, where we see this so often is with kids with ADHD, okay? And you say, well, yes, this child has all the characteristics of ADHD, but it's not because they have some chemical imbalance.
Right.
It's because of the way they were raised,
right,
or it's because of environmental stressors, or it's because they're in the wrong grade, or they have a mismatch with their teacher. And a clinician has to be astute enough to uncover all those other possibilities.
Right.
And if you just go in and say, oh yeah, he looks like he has ADHD, he's got these six things, let's make the diagnosis.
Right.
Premature.
Right.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And so we have to be very careful and in the hands of a skilled. So making a diagnosis of a mental illness, a mental disorder, is a complex process and one that has to be done very carefully.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's no lab test, there's no blood test. There's a lot of people that talk about neuroimaging.
Right. And what about an MRI? What about a CT? What about functional MRI? What about all the stuff that Dr. Amen talks about?
Right. And the things that you see in that are neurological issues, but it's still, and it's going to identify significant structural and functional problems. But there are many people who have mental health issues that do not show anything through neuroimaging.
They have no abnormalities.
Right. Meanwhile, there are many people who have some abnormalities who show no symptoms. So there's not a one-to-one correlation there. It's not a perfect science.
Right. And neuroimaging studies, at least as they exist today, are mainly used for research purposes.
Mm-hmm.
They're
not
clinical tools yet, for as far as mental illness is concerned. If you're looking for structural abnormalities, yes.
Right.
But as far as mental illness, what we do is we look at a group of kids with ADHD and say, in this group, we found this.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean you're going to find it in every individual.
Right.
You're going to find it in a large group of people.
Okay? Yeah.
So it's an average number.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where the variability comes
in. And sometimes we can use neuroimaging on a confirmatory basis.
Right.
Because you can, if you see somebody with a certain clinical presentation, they can go have an MRI or a like a functional MRI or something like that done, mm-hmm. and say, yes, everything is consistent with that diagnosis. Mm-hmm. But the other way around doesn't work. You can't right. see somebody with that and say, that person has schizophrenia.
Right.
Because many people have some of those same structural mm-hmm. abnormalities.
That's right.
But don't have schizophrenia.
Don't present the symptoms.
So it's right. it's.
There isn't a one-to-one correspondence, and we don't have a we don't have an imaging technology
right.
that is diagnostic.
Right.
Okay. That's number. So right. so some people think that we do. Mm-hmm. You know, you can do a PET scan or a CT scan right. or an MRI and say, oh, there's the problem. No, that right. we don't have that kind of technology.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the way that you know Dr. Amen and some of these other folks use it, it's clinical.
Right.
But what they see is, okay, this is the clinical presentation. Mm-hmm. This is the way the brain looks on these neuroimaging studies. Right. Let's apply some interventions and see if we can make the brain look different.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's fine. But the neuroimaging isn't technically making the diagnosis.
Right.
He's
right.
looking at some aggregate data, he's looking at some consistencies. Oh, a lot of people with ADHD show this kind of right. structural presentation, mm-hmm. but it's not diagnostic in and of itself.
Yeah. We found... when I was at the University of Georgia, we did MRI studies, and right. we found these sort of common features among mm-hmm. Children. We did mostly children with ADHD.
Right.
Okay, not, but it's not diagnosed.
You, right.
Every child with ADHD doesn't have this. Right. You know, on average, it's the right frontal lobe is a little bit bigger, but not every child with mm-hmm. ADHD has that. So right. it can't be used diagnostically.
Right.
Useful information. But can't be used as a diagnostic tool.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when you look at the functional stuff, there's
harder.
A lot for treatment.
Right.
You know, yeah. it's good for treatment mm-hmm. stuff, but not diagnostic.
Right.
So.
We're getting there, but it takes science to get there.
It does take science and research. Yeah. So, but we got to.
That's another.
And research takes money. So there we are to money again. But do you have anything else for today? Tomorrow we're going to talk about the difference between diagnoses and symptoms,
right.
Because that there's a big difference
yeah.
there.
All we wanted to do today was to say, we understand the question that we want to, and we all agree, we want to keep the hands out mm-hmm. of, but we don't want to keep the hands out of people with mental illness. We want to keep
the guns.
Yeah. You say hands.
You said the hands out of people.
No, your hands are safe, even with us. We don't want to keep guns out of the hands of people with mental illness. We want to keep guns out of the hands of people who might.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's a very, very, very different question,
right.
and that's what we want to pick up tomorrow. Is how do we identify those who are
right.
at risk? That probably has very little to do with mental illness,
right.
in fact. So that's what we'll be discussing tomorrow.
Absolutely.
Right?
Okay. Yep. All right. So until then, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid. Thanks for sharing this episode of the Mental Breakdown and PsychReg podcast. Be sure to check out the show notes for links to follow us on Twitter and subscribe to our YouTube channel, where you will find all of our previous podcasts and much more. We would be honored if you would become a patron through patreon.com, where any donation you can manage will go to the development and creation of more content. Just visit patreon.com/themental breakdown for more information. Thanks again for listening. Have an awesome day, and we look forward to being back in your feed tomorrow morning. Thank you.